Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the TV shows of 1999 from Flatpoint High here in 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Phyllis Gove.
And with us today is Meredith Blake, an entertainment writer. She told me like two things to say, and I said something that wasn't a staff writer, entertainment journalist from the LA Times, a real publication. Take that, IndieWire.
Oh. Oh my. We love IndieWire.
They don't know it yet, but we are feuding with them.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Not really, but sort of.
Well, they don't know it. But we are.
They don't know it, and they'll never know it. But I do think
I'll let them know.
Did you let them know? That'd
no,
be great. You should tweet at them, to. Kenny.
Yeah.
Say we're coming for you.
They treated our friend poorly.
They did treat our friend very poorly. Meredith, I reached out to you to come on this podcast. We're incredibly thankful that you found the time to do so. And this was the show that you were like, I would love to come on to talk about Strangers with Candy.
Yes.
So what's your history with Strangers with Candy? Were you one of the few that watched this in 1999?
Was I one of the 11 people watching it?
It is a brilliant show, a show that, if I'm being completely frank, I have never seen before. I've heard of it. Kenny, I think you were in the same boat in terms of it being sort of this, or maybe you had seen it.
Oh no, I'd never seen it. Okay. I had heard of it. I mean, it was on, if I remember correctly, Meredith, you might correct me on this, but I think it was actually on kind of in that weekday afternoon slot.
And
it was
heavily promoted on Comedy Central, and I was watching Comedy Central a decent amount there. I think maybe it was like I was watching, I don't know, maybe The Daily Show or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of promotion for it, and it always really turned me off.
Well, the aesthetics of it without context would probably be a little bit unsettling.
It's jarring. You're just like, who is this strange looking woman, and why should I watch this bizarre show?
Why is she in high school?
Yes, and why does her hair look like that? I actually didn't watch it at the time. I did watch a fair amount of Comedy Central in that period. You know, this was like the South Park, early Jon Stewart days. Comedy Central, I think, was having a moment. And I also remember a similar feeling of like, I don't know what that weird show is. I vaguely knew who she was because I think because of her brother, David Sedaris. Mm-hmm. But I think I also kind of confused Amy Sedaris with Amy Poehler, who I knew from other things. So it was like funny names, ladies.
I mean, they look a little similar. You know.
They do a little bit. And then I was always sort of aware of it, but this was also, you know, the late 90s, a time when you could be aware of something and just never get around to watching it. And then it would just go away or you'd have to wait for like a cable marathon or something. And I, a few years later, my roommate when I was living in Brooklyn was a huge fan and we, just watched it endlessly. I think we both got like a season or two at the Virgin Megastore on DVD because that's how you would watch stuff in 2004. And, we would just watch it constantly on repeat, you know, when we were hungover on Saturday afternoon. And that's really where
I feel like there are people in Brooklyn right now dressing like Jerry Blake. Like that feels to me like a thing that like her look is probably huge in Williamsburg.
Like the awkward high-waisted pants and kind of like normcore sweatshirts and turtlenecks and stuff. Jerry is
a
style
icon. If
the hair comes
back. If the hair goes back, then we'll know we're really in the Jerry Blankets house.
And we're really in trouble.
There was something I found very off-putting about the show. based on the ads back in 1999. Mm-hmm. And also it was, you know, like so much of 1999, Entertainment Weekly was my guru and my Sherpa through my entertainment travels, and I don't think that they talked about this a lot.
I don't think they got it. I don't think a lot of people got it.
I don't think they got it. Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's a show that came out. It's not a very obscure show. I don't know why I'm presenting like this, but about 5 or 6 years later, the Sarah Silverman program came out on Comedy Central, which has the same kind of anything goes ethos and the same kind of let's pick a game early in the episode and elaborate upon it over and over again throughout the episode. And I loved that show. I watched every episode multiple times and couldn't get enough. And my sense is Strangers with Candy really would have succeeded about 5 or 6 years later when the culture was ready for it. And I think this was, you know, I'm not always a big fan of the term ahead of its time. I think that's you're very lucky if you were ahead of your time. You had no idea what was going to happen, but this was, you know, genuinely ahead of its time. And that this kind of gonzo do anything, you know, take a joke, run with it as far as it can go. Humor became really big in the 2000s. All the stuff I watched in the 2000s that I thought was brilliant feels like a offspring of this show.
Yeah, you know, I it's interesting because, I mean, first and foremost, Meredith, I'm from Toronto originally, so I didn't have Comedy Central. Until obviously I moved down here. And so Comedy Central, there were things that would matriculate up to Canada, and I believe that this was one of those things. But I wanted to just talk for a second about Comedy Central because I do think that it's sort of, you mentioned it earlier that it was having a moment, it feels like. I mean, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart starts in 99 as well.
This was year one of Jon Stewart.
Right. So Daily Show hadn't really become what it became, obviously, until a couple years later, I would argue. I mean, it was not sort of from the moment Jon Stewart did it that it was, you know.
Just real quick on The Daily Show.
Yeah, please.
I mean, not to laud Craig Kilborn, but The Daily Show, even when it just kind of came up with Craig Kilborn, was a revelation.
Okay.
It wasn't what it became later with Jon Stewart, where it actually was kind of the paper of record for the country for about 15 years. But it really, the Craig Kilborn version was widely watched and it was influential and it was a very important show. And Jon Stewart taking it over was... people didn't know what to do with that.
Right.
You know, because his Jon Stewart show kind of failed. Remote Control was, you know, it's not a real show. And it did take a few years for people to realize, oh, no, this guy's the smartest man in America. And we're blessed to have him run, you know, the show. but yes, I think that the Comedy Central thing, and I mentioned this on a podcast recently, Mm-hmm. Comedy Central in the early 90s was a no pun intended joke. It's where bad comedians went to do their sets, and right. it was awkward and uncomfortable. And then around the mid 90s, it started to get some really kind of interesting content. I mean, Daily Show's definitely one mm-hmm. of them.
Sure.
South Park's definitely one of them. And, you know, Strangers with Candy clearly is also one of these shows that didn't feel like, you know, Comedy Central for a while felt like it didn't even, you know what kind of comedy it wanted to be. And then it kind of figured out that it was going to be edgy alternative comedy. And that
well, because it's to your point, Kenny, it starts with like they had Mystery Science Theater 3000. They obviously had Kilborn on Daily Show. They had Dr. Katz, professional therapist, that, Bill yeah. Stein's money.
They had a lot of reruns, basically.
These are all
reruns, they had,
yeah.
speaking of Canada, they yeah. had Kids in the Hall.
They did Kids in the Hall.
They had, which is where I first started watching it, and they had Absolutely Fabulous, which I watched yeah. when I was like 13 and understood like 10% of the jokes. but, you know, I think it was sort of a little bit of a wasteland of like acquisitions and reruns from other countries.
Totally.
And then they sort of slowly started moving into the scripted stuff, and they had Politically Incorrect, which everyone sort of forgets about for a couple
yeah.
years, and
yeah,
that was
did.
In the
yeah.
the Daily Show time slot. So they'd started dabbling in comedy, and I would say they'd sort of maybe staked out a tentative brand as like irreverent, politically incorrect comedy at the time. But you know, it was still very much like a you know, a marginal network where you could do what you wanted on a very small budget. And that's kind of what they did.
It is interesting,
know?
Too.
Kind of what they still are.
Kind yeah.
of. Well, I mean, so Viacom buys them in 2003. And I feel uh-huh. like that's a sea change, which is interesting because I don't necessarily think of Viacom as a particularly edgy corporation by any means. And yet it does usher in what you're talking about, Kenny. It ushers in the Chappelle Show. It ushers in Reno 911, South Park. That's the stuff that really builds the brand of Comedy
yeah.
Central.
Sarah Silverman program.
Sarah Silverman program as well, obviously, you know, and then Colbert Report being the spinoff and all that kind of stuff. It is fascinating that it's one of the myriad of networks, I would argue, that for reasons that are beyond me, has been kind of left to twist in the wind over the last 5 to 10 years. MTV being the other one, where I'm just sort of like, why did you guys just kind of let these things just die? You know, and it's just it's bizarre. Now it's all sort of baked into Paramount Plus, whatever Paramount Plus is in terms of its branding. And you know, it's a fascinating thing, and it does feel like Strangers with Candy, which, you know, is on, you know, Paramount Plus if people want to watch it, was one of those things that just kind of got lost in this transition, in this kind of late 99, early 2000s, when the branding of Comedy Central wasn't really codified yet. And I feel like, to Kenny's point, had this been a thing that came up with the Reno 911s of the world, I think that it could have been a big hit. It's a shame that it wasn't. But I'll also say, too, that it's cult classic bona fides that it has now. You know, I tweeted yesterday about it. I having never seen it, and a bunch of people were just like, I'm just so excited for you to have watched this now. And you know, it's you know, it does feel like a thing that's almost more special, if you will, perhaps
yeah.
because of it. Do you yeah, please. Sorry, go ahead, Mary.
No, I completely agree. And it is and I'm just thinking, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but it's also this show that's sort of inspired by a thing that was like a cult thing
yes.
that some people
yes.
knew about, and you uh-huh. can enjoy the show without totally understanding that backstory. But I think there is something that makes it all the more special, you know, when you're one of the cherished few who understand it and know it really well, and find someone else who's seen it and loves it. You know, I think one of the reasons that it hasn't really, even though it's still beloved by a lot of people, entered kind of the TV canon is just the vagaries of like rights and stuff, you know, like it wasn't sure. streaming until recently, you know, you had to buy the DVD, and who wants to buy a DVD? So I think that's kind of part of it. But I do yeah. think it is weirdly ahead of its time. I could see it sort of existing on, I was actually thinking about this before. I was like, where would this show possibly have existed? And I was like, maybe IFC in like 2015
yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
alongside like Portlandia and all these other sort yeah. of aggressively weird kind of satirical shows that are also not really a straight satire, if that's a thing. You know, because Strangers with Candy is ostensibly a spoof of After School Specials.
Yeah.
But it isn't really that straightforward. It's much stranger and more twisted and surreal than that. And that's what makes it so great.
It feels like that's how you sell it, right?
Yeah.
It feels like that's how you know, that's the pitch.
Yeah.
But within 5 minutes, it's so far gone from there. and thank God, too, because like, the After School Special, you know, in 1999, I was 17 and I never watched an After School Special.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thing when we were, you know, when I was growing up. So that is a reference that the reference I get is the reference to the reference, if that makes sense.
100%. It's like a cultural shorthand and we understand what it means without ever having watched it. I don't think I ever saw one.
and usually derisively, right? So
yeah,
it's, you know, I already get that After School Specials are lame. You don't have to you know, have a show making fun of them for me to understand that this is a lame thing. But that's, you know, I said to Phil, there was a time, I mean, when I moved out here, where this is the kind of show I wanted to make. You know, this show where you can just take a little nugget and let it grow, germinate, go wherever you wanted it to. And all the shows that I was really, really inspired by when I was younger, before I, you know, moved into teen drama, we're like, I mean, Wonder Chosen and Harvey Birdman and these, you know, Sarah Silverman and Community and these wacky shows that just broke the rules. And it's really, you know, I do feel like this is one of the first things that moved from independent shorts, Chicago stage, that kind of stuff, to an actual very small TV network. And I feel like I missed it. I feel like I should have given it a shot when I was a younger man.
You know, I think it's interesting too, because like, I was talking to a friend about that I was going to do this episode, and she was like, it's a sketch show, right? And I was like, no, I don't think it is. But I think that I didn't know at the time, but as I was watching it, I understand why people made that association to some degree or another. Yeah. Like, I think it's clumped in with your Kids in the Halls and your Sarah Silverman shows and your what have yous, you know, that had this kind of sketchy.
Well, Sarah Silverman wasn't sketch either. It was.
Right.
It was this.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is the sort of like no holds barred, no rules. You can kind of do whatever you want to do. I understand the association that people make to sketch with that, because sketch also, obviously, there's really kind of no uniform thing. This has a plot. Sarah Silverman had a plot, like had a superstructure, if you will, in terms of like what it was. But it is interesting how, to your point, Kenny, you know, the whole scared straightness thing of like an After School Special only really works generationally, right? Like, the reason this sells in a room to Comedy Central is because those executives are of an age that they're like, oh, I remember After School Specials. I don't know that you could sell this today. Like, I don't know that superstructure necessarily works today. I think it kind of works in its moment. But I also think, yeah, go ahead. I'm
sorry. At this point, it's almost a joke on a joke on a joke.
Right.
You could do it, but you would all. I don't even know how far you could go. But you because Strangers with Candy went really far. But you're really getting into some, like, you know, Heat Vision and Jack type.
Yes. Where
nothing really counts anymore. You know, there's no gravity in this world type situation.
Yeah. 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 I do want to give a very quick synopsis for the people that haven't watched Strangers with Candy. The series' main character, Geraldine Antonia. Jerry Black, a blank, that is, played by Amy Sedaris, was a junkie whore runaway returning to high school as a freshman at age 46 at the fictional Flat Point High School, home of the Concrete Donkeys, in the town of Flat Point. Jerry ran away from home and became a boozer, a loser, and a user after dropping out of high school as a teenager, supporting her drug habits through prostitution, stripping, and larceny. She has been to prison several times. The last time she quote unquote stole the TV. Every episode featured
which is a tagline in the season two opening credits that will stay in your mind for all forever and ever. God, sorry, go ahead.
So every episode features a warped theme or moral lesson, ends with the cast and other feature actors from the episode dancing. The last episode features Flat Point being turned into a strip mall because the show was canceled to make room for a TV show called Strip Mall. In 2007, Strangers with Candy was ranked number 30 on TV Guide's top cult TV shows ever. And in terms of you sort of alluded to this earlier, Meredith, in terms of the flashpoint and the development of the show. But basically, the series was first envisioned by Amy Sedaris as a parody of after school specials. And while she was putting together a pitch for the series, her friends Paul Dinello and Stephen Colbert watched a bootleg of a scared straight type public service film called The Trip Back, in which a motivational speaker named Flory Fisher, who, among other things, recalled her days as a New York prostitute to a group of high school students. Seeing that Fisher strongly resembled their friend Amy Sedaris, they showed her a copy of the tape, and suitably, she was impressed. She did an imitation of Fisher and began developing the show basically from that. I love there's these two quotes that I need to read. There was a GQ article where they did sort of a very mini oral history of the show, and Stephen Colbert said that Amy had a cupcake business. She would be sitting on the floor frosting cupcakes to sell at bakeries and go, "What about?" and have the perfect thing. We'd say that again. And she'd go, "What did I say? I mean that as a compliment." She was sort of like an idiot savant. And then Sedaris said, they got the video at Kim's Video in the East Village. She looked like Mike Dukakis. He goes, "I think you should do this woman." And she had the idea that she goes back to high school, and Stephen had the idea that I would learn the wrong lesson. And I said, "Okay, she'll be a junkie whore this time." I told the hair and makeup people I want to look like a professional golfer. I told the wardrobe I want to look like I own a snake. And that's all I gave them.
It's such a good note. It's
a brilliant note. Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah. And it really does. I mean, it's so funny because, like, you know, Kenny and I have been in situations in rooms and what have you, where like the planets align, right? And like all the people are bringing a thing to the table and you're all just like, it is that synergistic, unbelievable, wonderful moment where it feels like it's lightning in a bottle. And you sense that with this, you sense that it's the right people seeing the right thing at the right time. And it's so special. It's tremendous.
You sense, and this is why I'm smirking, you sense it happened all the time.
Well, that's like, it. Like, sure, sure.
Like easy, right? Yeah. Whereas like it's something you're chasing for like days and days and days, you know, in a normal room setting. But I don't know. I mean, these people are like beyond belief brilliant.
But don't you also think over again? Don't you also think that because they notoriously had like no notes? Because like Comedy Central at the time was just sort of like, go do it, everyone.
Go do it.
I'm sure that this cost like $5.
Yeah, they didn't have any execs, just the guy who pressed play on the VHS.
I mean, I mean, they shot the show in an abandoned high school press play somewhere. Like they just, it had no sort of like, there was nothing really containing the quote unquote madness. And I say that with nothing but obviously love. And I just do wonder, I mean, maybe in 2003, 2004, they would have been given their shot to do this as well. I mean, Sarah Silverman obviously was, and other people were given that chance. But I think the lack of notes, you really feel, right? Like you, as you're watching this, you're just like, I kind of can't believe this got made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of it that I think some of the off color humor might not fly today. Sure, I'm sure that it wouldn't. There's a lot of jokes that just wouldn't pass in 2022, for better or for worse. But you can sense that they were just kind of left alone to their own devices. And sometimes that leads to brilliant weirdness, as it did in this case, you know. I think the third episode is a spoof of it's not even a spoof. Jerry gets cast as Mama in Raisin in the Sun. Which is
I didn't watch so the funny. Third one.
I watched the first two and I was just like, but the third one, that sounds incredible.
Yeah, I might watch that right now.
And it triggers. And anyway, she's playing, you know, Jerry, this 46-year-old white woman is playing Mama, a black woman, impoverished woman in the south side of Chicago. And her mother, her stepmother character, you know, this dredges up all these horrible memories for her stepmother, who used to be an actress, and she goes on an alcoholic bender. So yeah, anyway, that's a long way of saying like they were just doing whatever the hell they wanted, and clearly the network lawyers weren't too worried about pushback from the audience, because I guess there wasn't really one.
I wanted to just quickly, there was very little pushback that goes, that you could sense that from every scene. Like every scene has and again, this is kind of the Kids in the Hall sketchiness, in the sense of feeling like, and it's what you were saying, Kenny, of this comedy can go anywhere. Like it's almost dangerous, right? Like it can do things that you're just unsure of. And I do think that like, you do see it with South Park, but it's animation, so it's a slightly different thing. Like this is live action, real people in real situations, makes it feel that much more sort of electric. But I also just wanted to talk about Colbert for a quick second, because like this is where he cuts his teeth. This is where he sort of becomes who he becomes. Then he's on The Daily Show, and you know he is who he is now. And I adore him. I think that I think he's the best. And one of the things that I find really fascinating about him too is, while making this show, he's living in a church, literally living in like this apartment monastery in a church monastery, right?
Yeah.
With his wife and his first child. The way he puts it, he's like, they had running water and I was happy. And I'm just like, what an amazing man who is deeply religious and yet makes this kind of comedy, does what he does. I wish there were more of him. Like, I wish that that to him, it's like, this is my belief system. I believe what I believe, whatever. But I'm going to make a show that's basically straight up about abortion. And like, it's amazing.
Well, he's just the best and the smartest. He's like, you know, we did Bruno, and I feel this way about Sacha Baron Cohen to some extent, though. Sure. I think he misses a lot more than Stephen Colbert. There are just these people who are just beyond belief evolved when it comes to their way with words and the ability to say not just the right thing, but the literal best thing in every scenario. And I don't know how people feel about this in general. I strongly prefer Stephen Colbert's human form to his Colbert Report form. I had a problem with the Colbert Report. The secondhand embarrassment was too much for me. Like it was too much. Real people not like interacting with Colbert when he was, you know,
and not knowing that it was a bit,
even if they did, it was even worse when they did, because that's a weird, like that's a very weird thing to have to like try to match energies with someone you know is playing a character. The character is smart enough to catch you in a lie. It was a trap. I never would have gone on that show.
But I
love him, and I think he's spectacular.
I love him too. I think he's spectacular. And I also think he's one of the few people that physically enters a scene and I'm already laughing. I don't know what it is about the space that he exists in. The first scene in this pilot at the school. Well, first of all, it should be said that like, this show feels brilliant from the jump, right? Like from the second you press play, I literally was just like, oh my God, how have I not watched this before? Like, how have I not seen this before? This thing feels so perfect from the jump. But the credits are amazing. The credits are like these like after school special kind of like Degrassi Junior High credits that are just incredible. Amy Sedaris's look is just phenomenal. As we mentioned, her makeup is insane, her fashion, all of it. They're in a classroom. The very first scene, at the end of the scene, she's walking out. Colbert says to her something about the classes or she has to do something. Her immediate line is, I'm having my uterus scraped. I brought a note. And then Colbert says, I read the note. We all read the note. And it's just the way he delivers it, the way he said, like, it's what you were saying, sort of, Kenny, of like, there's a humanity to him. Like there's this human quality to him. He feels like a real person, but he's heightened enough that he's absolutely hilarious. all the, I mean, again, Kenny and I only watched the first two episodes, but the runner with him and the other co-creator, Danilo, as these gay lovers that are constantly in places that clearly they're gay. And that's, I mean, it is just phenomenal. I just, I love it so much.
I think watching it, I was a huge, huge fan of Colbert Report. I actually loved him in character, but we can save that for another episode. And I think you can see kind of the kernels of that character in his character in Strange with Candy, who has the incredible name of Chuck Noblet. And it's kind of this.
What's the other teacher's name? It's like
Joffrey Jellyneck. The names on this show across the board are just genius inspired, so funny. But Chuck Noblet is this history professor, and he's a little bit of a blowhard who says things a lot like the Colbert character, with utmost confidence but also without actual knowledge. You know, he says some very kind of, I would say, hard right-wing things throughout the course of the season.
Did you catch it on the corner of his blackboard?
Yes,
he had a running tab of the races of his students. Filipino had a zero in a big line.
Right. And what does he say about Hiroshima? Oh, maybe that's a later episode.
No, anyway. The first thing is about the internment camps. And
the internment camps.
Never forget the atrocities the Japanese did to, you know, dip on our boys or whatever. The Japanese treated our boys.
So you can see kind of the kernels of it, and just there's just little gags like in that first episode, I think he whips out a calculator. Do you guys remember this?
And he mashes it with his fingers.
With the back,
which was definitely a Colbert Report kind of running thing. So there's a lot of, and even just in sort of the turns of phrase they use on the show a lot, is a very Colbert thing. I imagine that was maybe his influence, but the Jellyneck love affair is just an incredible running gag throughout the show.
Real
fast before we get to Jellyneck. There are a few things early in the episode where, in the first episode, where all my concerns about this being, obviously I have a real thing about secondhand embarrassment. So this would be like embarrassing to watch, were alleviated very quickly. Because one was the scraping of the uterus. Another one was that she was already failing, even though it's only the third day of school. Right. Another one was the way he hit the calculator with the backs of his fingers. And then the one that really like fucking knocked me off my feet was her dad.
Oh, my God. Is he taxidermied? Is that basically
No. He's alive because he keeps doing stuff. He gives the brother money. He pulls him back.
He picks up.
How do we even explain it?
Yeah, if you haven't seen
this, he's frozen. And I actually Googled the actor. I guess he was like an old vaudeville actor, and Eddie Cantor was his father-in-law. Sorry, I went down a rabbit hole about. Amazing. So he every time we see him, he is frozen with like his mouth open in some kind of like motion.
He does look taxidermied.
He does, right?
Yes, and he's so incredibly still. And presumably he interacts with other people, but we never see it. You know, those scenes where he'll supposedly be on the phone with someone, but you only see the person he's talking to and not him. So it's just this running gag that's never explained that suspended animation or something.
That, for whatever reason, because they wait a minute to reveal it. He comes in and starts talking to her dad, and they wait a minute to reveal him. And I was very nervous. I'm like, there's nothing new here. I've seen all the bad dads and all the bad spoofs. Like, this is going to be something I've seen before and something I found awkward. And there was something just so simple and beautiful about the dad, the 4,000 year old dad, because I should note he's 4,000 years old.
He's 4,000 years old. Yeah.
He's quite old.
So old. Who doesn't like 80? Yeah. I don't even understand it. I mean, I think I do, like on a cellular level, but that was what I'm like, all right, so this show is for me. I got it. Like,
The reason I thought he was taxidermied, for what it's worth, is because the reveal of him, he's surrounded by taxidermied animals. So I was like, oh, he must have been taxidermied himself. Now, what I love is that they apparently, so they killed off Guy, that's the father's, the character's name, in the second season because the creators ran out of ideas for him. And they literally said, they described Guy as going from the easiest character to write to the hardest character to write. And I can see that, right? Like, at first, I'm just, you know, I'm assuming, Kenny, in a comedy room, you're just like, well, this is a great bit, right? Like, we can do this forever. And then at a certain point, you just have to be like, I don't, what are we going to do with this?
This is the kind of thing that dies the moment you say it in 99.99% of comedy rooms. Like, this is the kind of thing where, like, someone would, like, I don't know, this might be a crazy idea. He never moves.
Right. How would you even pitch it?
Yeah. People be like, I mean, what? No, bear with me. He's a crazy look on his face, but he never act, when the camera's on him, he looks like he just saw Great Caesar's Ghost. And that's it. And
but what's great is that his movements are incredibly fast.
Yeah.
So like the money like whips up real quick. Well, or like when he picks her up at the motel, he pulls up real quick.
It's such a testament.
It's fucking brilliant.
When we were talking earlier about how it seems like they have that mind meld thing going all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you only have that mind meld thing when you're willing to go there with your co-creators. And someone had to say that ridiculous idea, and someone had to take it seriously and build on it, and then someone else had to take it seriously and build. Mm-hmm. And they had that moment where, like, are we really doing this? Which is the best moment in TV when you get people to agree on something that's new. Like the best moment because I don't know, you're gonna it's like Thelma and Louise. You're gonna go into this driving this bridge together.
It's really something special.
Yeah. I love that also that GQ article, which people should check out.
Absolutely.
There's a quote in there where Amy says they were like Paul and Stephen were like the wood choppers, and she's the one who like decorates the tree. Like she's kind of chaotic and like is great at the sort of flourishes, and they sort of get the structure of it somehow. I just love that analogy, metaphor, whatever it is. I think it's so I think it's so revelatory, and I love sort of the way that different comedic sensibilities mash together is so interesting to me. Because Amy, I don't know if you guys have seen her other stuff, like At Home, which is a show she had a couple years ago, which was really funny, and it has the same kind of like homespun weirdness as this show, like that kind of, you know, surreal yet also strangely kind of wholesome like sensibility as this, but then it doesn't have kind of, I don't know, it doesn't quite as go to this so many weird places, but yet is also deeply strange. And you can see kind of how this and Colbert mashed together gets you Strangers with Candy. It's really
absolutely. It's you know, it's also one of those things where when you actually like lay out what's happening in the episodes, like in this episode, she makes these drugs called
Glint.
She makes Glint and she gives it to Poppy, her nemesis, but also the person she really wants to be friends with.
Well, that's, you know, that's classic.
Slash. Also maybe have sex.
Also slash, 100%. That's the other thing too, like Jerry's so horny all the time.
Like
she's just, and she's trying to have sex with high schoolers.
Well, she was a crack whore. I mean, you know.
She is.
They can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Polyamorous crack whore. She's great. She's
brilliant. Yeah. So she gives Poppy the glint. Poppy gets super high. There's an amazing shot, which I actually really wonder how they did.
Oh, I feel the same way.
Of the rope.
Poppy
climbs the rope at like superhuman warp speed.
But in a way that it didn't look like some kind of cartoon joke. It looked like they just got Simone Biles to do it. You know?
It was incredible. And then Poppy thinks she's a bumblebee and she tries to run inside a keyhole and dies. is put in a coma. And then Poppy goes to the hospital to unplug her. But it turns out that Poppy was already dead, so she doesn't have to do that. And then she has a party / wake for Poppy. And then people get high at the party and they accidentally kill her pet turtle Shelly.
That was so fucking funny.
We should say like her motivation is popularity. Like she just is dying to be popular now that she's 46 and she's back in high school. And that's kind of her one driving force that drives everything she does.
I'm not 46, but I'm not far off. And I dream about being in high school or college almost every night. For instance, last night I dreamed about being in college, and the nightmare of the dream was that I got there was a secret society that my cousin was starting and he didn't let me in. So I too dream about being popular, and I could really relate to Jerry's plight. Even as a 40, I'm a 40 year old. Even as a 40 year old, if I went back to high school, like, I would 100% care about being popular.
It's amazing how much that's in your DNA to some degree, right? Like part of it is just you never fully get over high school to some degree or another, like because it's adolescence, because it's so formative, because of all of that, I think that for a lot of people, they still long for that acceptance, right? So the show being hardwired into that idea that Jerry is looking for acceptance, it just makes it so human, right? Like, I think that there's something, I literally just watched a TikTok the other day of this woman who probably is in her 30s and was walking down the street and was just basically said that I was walking down the street and some teenager was like, that outfit's awesome, or you look really cool, or something like that. And she's just like, it was a dream come true. She's just like, all I want is for kids to think I'm cool for 5 minutes and it'll be, and it's, and I think that we all still long for that. And Jerry, who is this, obviously this like over the top cartoonish 47 year old crack whore who's back in high school, still has that, right? Like that makes her so, I just think it makes her so human. Even if she is literally, it feels like a living cartoon character.
You guys don't dream about being in high school or college?
I have like anxiety dreams where I'm in high school or college and I have to, you know, I have an exam that I'm not ready for. Yes, sure. Yes, 100%.
And at some point, Meredith, I always remember in the context of my dream that I am actually an adult. I've done this before. Sure. I don't need to be here. I've already graduated and I'm here kind of voluntarily because I don't have a job. So I should like do something, you know, constructive, and high school is very hard. And I think I plan to leave and then I wake up, but I almost every single night I have four classes. I've only gone to one, three of them I'm going to fail.
But don't you think that this is evergreen? Like, I feel like every few years, I mean, I think there's one on right now on Netflix with Rebel Wilson where she goes back to high school. Like, I feel as though
I think it might be a movie. Came out. Yeah.
And it's, you know, there's exactly 17 again in 2009, right?
Like, Never Been Kissed was right around Never Been the time Kissed,
which
was
that's 99 as well, which we covered a little while ago. there is something so. It's wish fulfillment to some degree, mm-hmm. right? Because we all wish that we could go back and know what we know now and go back and do it all again, but do it right this time, right? The whole youth is wasted on the young thing. And I think that I mean, of course, who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want to be able to relive that stuff? So I think that all that stuff is so evergreen. There'll always be something in the ether about that.
The Rebel Wilson one is she is in a coma for a period of time,
sure,
and then wakes from the coma and goes back to high school to finish it out. If you guys were in a coma from, you know, your sophomore or junior year in high school and you woke up 10 years later, would you bother going back?
Probably not.
Good question.
It's important to have a high school degree in our, you know, our society. Yeah.
Yeah. After 10 years in a comatose state. It would probably be important, especially after 10 years out of the job market, to have a high school degree. But I don't know.
I feel like I've tried to find a loophole, but it really happened to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to some GED classes.
I'm doing it online. I'm not gonna, if I all of a sudden, I mean, this is part of why I think that the show is so amazing too, right? Mm-hmm. And it's why that Jerry has no problem with being 46 and looking how she is and trying to become friends with a bunch of teenagers. Like there is that lovely sort of bubble that she lives in of delusion, I guess, to some degree or another, that makes it so special, right? Whereas like, if you look at something like Never Been Kissed, which is a good example, where I like Never Been Kissed, I just certainly didn't hate it. I think Kenny and I were kind of on the same page about sort of its flaws, but it's too aware of itself. Like, she's too aware of what she's doing. Like, the unawareness of Jerry makes this so much more enjoyable to watch.
Yes. Right? And I think there's this weird, also the unawareness of everyone else, that Jerry's maybe kind of weird. Like, for a 46-year-old, you know, ex-convict, she is surprisingly accepted. Like, you know, she'll riff some of the funniest moments of the thing are where she sort of goes into her like streetwise monologues. Like in episode two, Jerry has to watch a baby. It's like it's kind of a spoof of like the sitcom trope of when you get an egg and you have to take care of the egg, so it'll teach you a lesson about being a parent. Only on this show, they give her an actual baby, and she's walking around the baby, and she's going on about how she could get 70 G's for it on the black market, and it gives two lives and twice that much. And it's so funny. And just, she says stuff like that all the time, and she'll make references to like the donkey show in Tijuana that she worked in, all these like crazy lurid experiences. And no one ever really looks at her like it's a strange or weird, you know, she just is Jerry. And I think that makes it so much funnier.
Absolutely.
Because everyone in the show is incredibly strange too. They're all strange in different ways.
Yeah. That baby reveal works. In order to help you learn to take care of a 10-pound baby, we're going to give you a 10-pound baby.
Right. It is a very cute baby, I should say.
It is a cute baby.
It's so funny. It's like Jim Gaffigan's joke about having four kids. Are you aware of this? Have I said this on the podcast?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the best joke ever told. It's the joke is people at, because Jim Gaffigan now has like six kids apparently. But they ask him what it was like to have his fourth kid, and he's like, imagine you were drowning and someone threw you a baby.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, exactly.
To wrap up what happens in at the end of episode one before we jump into two.
Oh, yes,
I'll just say that Poppy dies, Jerry mixes Poppy's ashes with her mother's and says, now don't stay up all night yakking, you two.
And I think that's a moment that really captures something about the character and Amy Sedaris's performance, because it's very cute. It's a kind of sweet and adorable. Yes. At the same time, it's super dark and sordid. You know, she's mixing ashes of her mother and her pet turtle after her friend died of an overdose from homemade drugs. You know, it's like, it's the specificity of the character and the combination of traits just really works because of her performance and the kind of underlying, like, barely perceptible at times sweetness that Jerry has.
You know what's funny, and why I think this may not have worked on Comedy Central in 1999, and this is probably a me problem, but I was a pretty typical young white boy living in the suburbs. Jerry looked really old to me when I was young. And now she looks like people I know.
Yeah.
So it's it is a little different, because back then, I mean, it felt like this was completely unrelatable. And now it feels like it's a little too relatable.
Uh-huh.
So I do think that I don't really know who the audience was at the time outside of people who really love comedy and are willing to go wherever brilliant comedians go. But in terms of that, you know, outside that very small sliver of the population, who's ready to consume this the way people consume South Park? I don't know if there's really anybody. Yeah. So I think that might have been a big barrier. The other barrier that I neglected to mention is Comedy Central's marketing at the time was deplorable.
Yeah, I mean, it's just embarrassing.
And made everything look horrible.
Yeah.
They did make a movie in 2005.
For Comedy Central?
No, it was a theatrical release.
You see that?
I did, yeah. It was...
It made just shy of $3 million. it is kind of, in its own weird way, kind of beloved by fans of the show. When it came out, however, it was not embraced by critics, and obviously it didn't do particularly well. I think it's got 52% on Rotten Tomatoes. What were your thoughts on the movie? Did you feel like it scratched the itch that you were looking for, or?
Yes, but it's not really something I've ever really gone back to since. You know, I think it was one of those things where I was a fan, I was hungry for more. It came out right around the time I was constantly watching it on DVD, so I just wanted a little more. And the finale is a finale, but it's a little abrupt. And you know, I was happy to spend an hour and a half or however long the movie is with the characters. And if it didn't all work together and it just felt like an extended messy episode, I was kind of fine with that. I wasn't asking for that much, you know. And I think it's like a lot of this is not a sketch show, but it's like a lot of SNL sketches turned movies where you're like, I don't know if this needed to exist, but I'm kind of fine with it existing.
Is
how I feel about the movie. And the movie has, like, I think Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it. You know, she gets like her celebrity friends to turn up, which is really funny.
Oh, I mean, listen to this cast. It's hilarious. Allison Chaney, Matthew Broderick, Sarah Jessica Parker, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Justin Theroux, Chris Pratt, Ian Holm.
Mm-hmm. Ian Holm just coming in there to... I mean, I definitely will check. I mean, first and foremost, it should be said that I will definitely continue to watch this show. Like, I do feel like I need to see as much of it as I can, and I do want to check out the movie. I do think that it's interesting that in 2005 this film gets made, right? Like, I think that today... you'd probably get, you know, a Netflix, you know, reboot or, you know, revival, what have you. I do think that it's interesting that it comes out in 2005. It's produced by Colbert and David Letterman. And, you know, I just think it's interesting. It feels like there was obviously a love for the show. I mean, we've had like the Firefly movie and like these movies that come out based, you know, even the Veronica Mars, which was basically Kickstartered. Like, you do get these things, these like beloved TV shows that get a movie, but like the movie's never really what you want it to be. And you're just sort of like, you're trying to rekindle a thing that just, it's the same with these revivals, quite frankly, where you're just like, you're trying to kind of bring something back. And it's like, who was it? I think it was Emily Nussbaum said, when I did a Sex and the City episode with her, and she said, it's like Pet Sematary, you know, it's like they come back different.
Right.
It just doesn't feel the same. So I want to talk for a quick second about the opening of the second episode, which I absolutely adored, which was the urinal bathroom scene between Colbert and Danilo. They're both, so basically Colbert is peeing in a urinal, and the other urinals are
in working. a very dark
very dark bathroom.
Is it like a park bathroom? I'm not sure.
You're never really sure.
Yeah, I think it was because they both had kids playing. I think they.
Oh, that's right.
They maybe even said it was at the park, but
So, and only one urinal is working. Danilo is right behind him, like giving him no personal space.
Right.
Colbert is peeing for a very long time. They're chatting about their wives both dying under mysterious circumstances.
Let's just say she went quick.
And then the other Danilo's like, she was murdered.
I never have this kind of recall for stuff we're doing. I really think I like this show.
Good. And then there's the line he says, sometimes that can be worse than divorce or something like that.
Yeah.
So funny.
But the scene ends perfectly with Colbert jumping on his shoulders, smashing the light bulb above them so that they can make out in the darkness. The camera pulls into the stall and Jerry's smoking a cigarette in the bathroom stall. It's just perfect. It's perfect. I love it.
And then she goes on her monologue. Yeah, she does that. I'm a 46-year-old.
It's just the clumsiness, the perfectness of Colbert jumping on his shoulders to smash the light bulb with his jacket. Like, she could turn off the light. Like, I don't know why, but it's such everything about the awesome. Scene is absolutely.
He didn't seem clumsy to me. He seemed agile. When he that was like Michael Jordan. Like, I mean, it was beautiful.
It is a perfect scene. Everything about it is amazing. Colbert, they're both just it tees up the runner throughout this episode and what I can only assume is the series of their obviously their love affair that continues throughout the show. But like the baby's found in a park at 3 a.m. and that's how
they just happen to be there.
The principal says, that's a good question. Why were you there? And then they just run out of the room.
Yeah. How about the principal, though?
Oh.
Blackman.
Principal Blackman. That guy is so funny. I couldn't
believe he's amazing.
He really hasn't done other stuff. I did like a little deep dive into him. His name's Gregory Holloman, and he was like a Second City guy. He was just he's just one of their guys. But that's like nothing like, he doesn't sound like that at all. And he speaks like with the most over the top affected intellectual accent, and he has pictures of himself all over the school in the suit. It's so funny, and he's so tall.
It's very, very tall too. I wanted to mention this earlier when you were talking about the names, Meredith, but Jerry Blank came from the fact that they didn't have a last name for her, so they put Jerry and a blank space, and they were just like, fuck it, I guess her name's Jerry Blank,
which I think is perfect. Amazing.
It is
right.
Blank is a great last name for any character. Yeah.
It's amazing. So at this point, Jerry is in her reproductive health class. As Kenny mentioned, she's handed a 10-pound baby and has to take care of it. She goes to the library to research having a baby, where she watches some sort of a video on like a microfiche.
It's like a film strip. Yeah.
And the basically, you don't see it, you just hear it, but it's a male voice saying stuff like, maybe you chased him off with your shifting moods. Anyway, he's gone now. Good luck.
And frankly, I blame him.
Right. This is ostensibly to teach her about being a single mother, right?
Yeah. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah, because the principal just says, he says you could learn more about it at the library. And she goes, she's just like, it was so straight line. She goes, I will go out there.
Straight to camera.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Then Jerry, so basically, Jerry's so bad with the kid, leaves the kid in the park, that they pair her up with another student so that hopefully, you know, the two of them can get through this assignment together.
Tammy Little Nut, who becomes a
Tammy Little Nut, who is very
so
earnest child who wants to do a good job at this assignment.
Yeah.
Which Jerry quickly becomes an abusive husband to.
Very, very quickly.
Yes.
Yes.
And screams at her in the cafeteria, throws milk at her, says, is that how they say hi in Whoreville?
And she kind of like, it's probably like a 3-minute scene where she sort of love bombs her. And then Tammy, you know, it's like very like a super accelerated abusive relationship where Tammy goes to get a carton of milk, takes too long. Then Jerry starts, you know, freaking out and, you know, builds her up, tears her down, builds her up. And then, you know, the gist is that she's an abusive husband to her co-parent.
And then lures her to a motel where she tries to seduce her.
And she's crimped her hair, which is how you know she's ready.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and she's wearing like a kind of gold like tracksuit. Yeah, yeah. And she's got the Vice channel on, which is such a funny reference.
Where she says something like, you can't see everything, but you can still see a fair amount of pink, which I'm just like, this is crazy.
It's incredible. Yeah, that this got past the network censors. Yeah.
Then she says, so Jerry's crimped hair is unbelievable. Then they get into a fight and Tammy says, you're crazy. And Jerry says, pee on me.
I forgot about that part. It's so, I love how deeply freaky Jerry is. Like, she is just an unrepentant, like, freak. It's amazing.
It's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
She's one of, I mean, and I honestly think, Kenny, that she might be one of the greatest characters of television in 1999. Yeah. Like,
she definitely is. Like,
she might be Mount Rushmore 99 characters. Like, it's we did a print with a
gift. You're saying the
right?
Oh, 100%.
So we did a print of 1999 film characters, like the, you know, all, you know, what we think are some of the best. And we're doing a TV print where we've picked the characters. And I got to tell you, Kenny,
I feel like we have to put Jerry on there.
Right. I got to reach out to Brianna and see if we can get her on there. Cause right now it's obviously Tony Soprano, President Bartlett, Sarah Jessica Parker, Carrie Bradshaw, Felicity, SpongeBob SquarePants, and Kenny's nodding in approval. I think there's one more that I'm forgetting, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe not. I feel like we got to get Jerry on there.
We didn't do Martin Starr from Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, from Freaks and Geeks, we should have. I'm gonna reach out to Brianna. Long story short, I just feel like Jerry now, to me, is such a fully realized, unbelievable character that I'm just like, I can't believe she wasn't in my life before.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm just so kind of taken with what she brings to this character, what Amy Sedaris is doing. I was thinking the other day as I was watching this about how much her cheeks must hurt from the way that she does this weird, like, overbite thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. She does this very aggressive overbite. And it's actually incredible, like, because Amy Sedaris, she does a lot of these very outlandish characters. And almost all of them are kind of grotesque in some way. But then you see her and she is like a very conventionally attractive person. And it's like sort of a shock to the system. There's an episode later on, actually the finale. And you see her sort of normal, you know, Jerry, Winona Ryder comes to town and she's like the new cool girl at school. And she takes Jerry under her wing and she gets a makeover and she comes out and you're like, oh my God, wait, that's what Amy Sedaris actually looks like. it's incredible, but she really seems to thrive on making herself like super gross looking. She has like a John Waters, there's like a John Waters sensibility to her. Yes, I don't know. There's a real, and I think maybe that's why, going back to the thing about Comedy Central, like it's definitely like too strange in some ways, even for Comedy Central at that time. You know, Comedy Central at the time was irreverent, but it was like The Man Show. It was South Park. It was a little bro-y, right? Like it wasn't, and Stranger to the Candy is definitely not bro-y, I would say.
No, it's very big hearted, which you mentioned earlier. Like it is earnest in its own way. And part of that I think is because I think that all these people are heartfelt, but then on top of it, the source material of these after school specials are so earnest, right? Like they're all dialed up to 11. All of these emotions are on their sleeve. So there is something, they're kind of metatextually playing with that notion as well, to some degree or another. I think it's really, I really do think it is groundbreaking. And I do wonder, you know, obviously Kenny alluded to like how much more successful the show could have been, you know, say 3, 4, 5 years later. But then I also wonder whether or not the things that came after it could have existed without this. Like it does feel like this show was the tip of the spear of doing what it did. Mm-hmm. Like I do wonder if that, you know, I don't want to say does South Park exist without this, because I think it's doing different stuff, but I just do wonder whether or not you need this as the baton that's being passed a little bit.
South Park predated this, but still,
right.
Sorry. There is that idea of, you know, I don't know. This doesn't feel like it's kind of in the same vein as that. We're, you know, there's a show that I love that feels very similar to this, which is Get a Life with Chris Elliott.
Yep.
Which is also, I don't know if this show was produced by Worldwide Pants, but that was a
I think it was. I think it was. Oh, you mean Strangers with Candy?
Yes.
I don't know. She was also, you know, you guys probably know this. She was like Letterman's favorite guest. Yes. She was sort of, yeah, that was kind of her claim to fame for a long time.
It's kind of that same Letterman sensibility. And you see it in the show, and it's why he's the best ever, because somehow he made that mainstream, which is insane.
Yeah.
But it's the same sensibility. Get a Life, I think, was mid-90s, maybe even early 90s. And that was my first glimpse into a show created by people who didn't give a shit.
Right.
I think there was stuff even a little before that. Like, I think Gary Shandling's first show. Gary's show, or it's
Gary's, it's the Gary Shandling show or something like that.
That was a little bit like that, and then
it's all very playing with TV conventions in a self-conscious way.
So yeah, and then taking it two or three steps beyond even what, you know, your typical like clever spoof would do. They're very. I mean, Strangers with Candy is a, now those are both multicam shows. Stranger with Candy feels like a more fully realized version of those shows.
You know, it doesn't have a laugh track, which I guess noticed. It would be weird with a laugh track, I guess.
On a single cam, it would be weird, but yeah, they did that sometimes.
They did.
Back then. And it's just, and I think this in the moment, it's kind of to its detriment, because the unreality of a multicam, I think, lends itself to playing with the form a little more, at least at the time, than the reality of a single cam. So it almost didn't feel like it was that crazy based on the ads, based on the marketing. So I do, yeah, but it feels like very much of like that, you know, under that undercurrent of alternative comedy, breaking down the structure and form of your typical TV and typical TV tropes in a really, you know, fully realized form. But yeah,
It's, you know, I'm looking at Worldwide Pants' productions, which, you know, obviously mostly revolve around late night shows. So Tom Snyder, Craig Kilborn, Craig Ferguson. I for some reason didn't know they produced Everybody Loves Raymond. Which, I mean, wow.
That worked out well for them.
Yeah, I truly had no idea that they were producers on that. So, I mean, that is enormous success, obviously. He's got, do you remember the show Knights of Prosperity, Kenny, which existed in 07 very briefly? They produced that.
What was that?
Was that the Let's Rob Mick Jagger show?
Yes, it was. Yes, it
was. Oh, my God.
Donald Logue, Sofia Vergara. Yeah. Vergara, yeah.
Very weird show.
Very strange show. So that existed for a heartbeat. Ed was the other kind of claim to fame. That ran for 4 years, and that was a show that I remember people really loved.
And that was like very much, for whatever reason, like Letterman like fronted that in a way, you know? Like, I forgot who the actor was. He loved that actor.
Oh, God. Why am I drawing a blank on his name? Tom Cavanaugh.
And that felt like Letterman was like, this is who I am. Like, this is, you know, me from Indiana, old David Letterman.
100%.
Away everything shucks. Else. Right.
And yeah, like, and he got the Foo Fighters to do the theme song because he's the biggest Foo Fighters fan. He loves the Foo Fighters. But yeah, it's just really, I agree with you, Kenny. That very much felt like the David Letterman show in a weird way. Yeah, it's interesting. It's, you know, hasn't produced much, but listen, if you produce Everybody Loves Raymond, you don't have to produce much.
That'll keep the lights on. Yeah,
that'll keep the lights on and then some. But I do think that that Strangers with Candy, to your point, Kenny, does feel like Letterman's sensibility a little bit, his comedic sensibility of that sort of off kilter, strange, unsure of what's coming down the pike kind of thing. And the Amy Sedaris thing, I think, is really fascinating, too, because I do think that, like, she is an icon unto herself, right? And yet, if you look at Amy Sedaris's credits, per se, like, she doesn't have anything that, like, really kind, like enormously successful. Do you know what I'm saying? And I don't say that with any slight.
You know, she has, I interviewed her a couple of years ago when she was doing At Home, and she has, I think, personally, I don't ever want to be famous, but if I ever were, I would want like her exact level of fame, look at her IMDb, she's just constantly working.
Yes.
Constantly. But she's almost never kind of the central character. She's either a guest star, or she's a voice character. Yep. You know, so she's probably financially comfortable and well beyond that. But you know, she doesn't ever have to be accosted in public by people except people who know who she is and appreciate her work. Yep. Her sensibility, you know, she's not just getting random strangers following her. You know, it seems to me like she's really figured out the exact perfect level of notoriety. And you know, when I talked to her, she was saying that she was sort of happy to have a show on True TV because nobody really watched it. Like, I think she's very content. And she was really open about it. She was like, I don't even know how you watch it. Like, I'm not really sure. And she was fine with that. You know,
someone pay me to shout into the void, please.
Yeah.
The other thing Amy Sedaris did was she was the voice, I think, was Princess Sparkles, her name?
Princess Carolyn.
Princess Carolyn. Bojack. Bojack. Which is, that plus Will Arnett, that's an interesting signaling of what this show is going to be.
Sure, it was.
You know, it was very much a cartoon version of playing with the tropes of.
Is she a Rugrat? Am I making that up? Is she a Rugrat?
Oh, she has done a lot of.
She could be a Rugrat.
She has done a lot of voice work. I think she did I had it pulled up before, but now I closed it. She did do some not Rugrats. I'm going to remember it as soon as we log off.
I'm pulling it up.
She does do a lot of like voice stuff. Bubble Guppies. That's what it is.
Bubble Guppies. I don't know what Bubble Guppies is.
That's a great show.
Yeah.
it's a kid show, Kenny?
Not as good as Octonauts, but it's perfectly fine.
Insane how much television she's done. But you know, she pops up on Sex and the City for 4 episodes.
Yeah.
She was on Ed. There you go, for 2 episodes.
She's on Kimmy Schmidt for a couple episodes.
Yeah. She was on Wundershowzen. She's obviously just working, you know, and as she should. I think, you know, it is interesting to speak of the level of fame that you were talking about, Meredith. Like, when she shows up in stuff, I often go like, wow, they got Amy Sedaris. Like, it feels a coup. Like, it feels like a thing. And yet at the same time, you're just like, but she's also just not in that much. Like, she has become, you've said it perfectly, the perfect amount of fame, which is that she means something to the people that she should mean something to. And thus, you know, she's figured it out.
There's something about casting a guest star who you know and has proven to be a genius in her own right. It's like whenever a show or a movie got Carrie Fisher, it's like, oh, Carrie Fisher read this and decided this was worthy of her time.
It got knighted.
Yeah, maybe we should pay attention. Yeah. And I think it's a similar thing with Amy Sedaris, where it's just like, oh, she's spending time on this.
It's true.
Like, I feel the way about Wanda Sykes. I feel it's like, Wanda Sykes got out of bed for this. Yep. Okay, maybe we should watch
it. It's worth watching. Yeah.
When she showed up on The Other Two, for instance, I was like,
incredible show. Yeah.
Amazing.
We love that show. That's exactly how I felt with that. I'm like, this has to be something serious. Like, I just know she's not wasting her time on something that sucks.
An incredible show that started, speaking of Comedy Central where do they go? Started on Comedy Central and then landed over on HBO Max.
Yeah,
that's true. Central.
I don't know how that happened. Is it not a Paramount show? It's very weird to me.
That's especially in this day and age where, like, if you don't own it in its entirety, it's like they don't.
I'm amazed.
Very few movements. I mean, The Other Two is, you know, not nearly as heightened as this show, as Strangers with Candy. But does exist in a sort of similar lane of kind of anything goes a little bit. Like, I think that show has also taken some swings. I think Search Party is another one that feels similarly kind of crazy in that respect.
Those two shows are truly incredible. And what's so upsetting about both of them is they feel grounded. Like, it's
compared to this.
Just in general, it's like the thing with the other two that's so weird is like they do some wacky stuff, but it always kind of feels like they're only like half a degree away from reality.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yes. You know? Yes.
And that's,
yeah.
Oh, that's like, and I love it, but that's like we are so fucking lost. As I told you guys, I went to a concert last night where a guy performed ukulele in an LED mask. So like, yeah. Here we are.
Well, it should also be said too, the other day I texted Kenny something. I texted you the Nicole Kidman thing, which turned out to not be real.
Oh, but good. Oh, thank
you. The AMC thing?
that she won a Pulitzer for the AMC commercial, which started to circulate through Twitter. Right. And it got to such a level that I was like, well, this really happened. Now, it didn't, and I'm thankful for that, but I also feel like it totally could have happened. Like, mm-hmm. That's it. When I texted Kenny, his response was, we're so lost. And I agree, because it did feel real enough that you were just like, oh, God.
This happened? Well, when you texted to me, my response was, we're so lost, because it felt like something had happened where internet meme culture had taken over. Yes. This high-minded culture in a way where it's like, it reminds me a little bit of like Elon Musk's tweets, where it's like he like gets the memes, but he doesn't get that he's not supposed to be tweeting them.
Yep.
And it's just, like the Elon Musk meme tweeting is one of like the, to me, just the most brain breaking things. Like, go to an island, please.
Yes.
Get out of here.
Go buy a fucking island.
Get out of here. Get away. No, sure. This is so ridiculous. You're buying fucking Tesla for $4.69. Stop it.
The whole thing's insane. It is interesting that it feels
Twitter,
like
not Tesla, but yes.
Yeah, Twister. Yeah, Twitter. I do think that, you know, part of this show, Strangers of Candy, existing back in 1999, and we've talked a fair amount, obviously, about television in 99 through this podcast, and how, you know, Freaks and Geeks is a perfect example of this as well, right? These shows that kind of could only exist in this moment, and that they really just couldn't exist today. Mm-hmm. There is an earnestness, there's a levity to it. Like, watching that second episode, and I certainly don't want to get too political, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but watching that second episode about reproductive health and contraception, and seeing the world we live in right now, or certainly feel like we're on the cusp of right now, you just go like, this was a joke back then that was like funny. And mm-hmm. now this hits harder because of the world that we live in. It just, all the rules of comedy, the rules of just pop culture, television, all that kind of stuff, is a constantly evolving animal, and it is a mirror unto the world that it exists in, right? So I think mm-hmm. that with a lot of the 99 stuff that we've been watching, Kenny, it all feels so, even The Sopranos feels hopeful in comparison to the world that we live in right now. So that's a whole other mind fuck too, to watch something like this and be like, Strangers with Candy is hopeful, where are we? Like, what, how, you know what I mean? Like, that's a whole other thing, you know?
She even has that line in the episode where she's like, I've had plenty of babies, just none I've carried to term. And like, I definitely laughed with a little bit of a, at the end, you know, because it hits home. You're right. It does. And I just think, I don't know, it's ahead of its, I mean, we've said it, it's very ahead of its time in so many ways. I think, you know, it's particularly in its kind of, how graphic it is. You know, I think the show is like unrelentingly graphic in a lot of ways that are so funny. And again, just an accident of the programming at Comedy Central at the time that no one was really paying much attention.
No one was minding the store.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that there are places right now where no one's minding the store, to be honest. I think if you're big enough and clever enough, you can sneak something in the side door at Tubi. And I think
Phil, you got to unmute. I have to.
Yeah, no, I absolutely hear you. I'm sorry. I muted because there's some construction going on outside my window. I agree with you, Kenny, that certainly in the AVOD world right now, you could probably get away with doing some pretty wackadoo stuff for sure. But yeah, it's a really it's a fascinating thing right now in terms of watching a show like this. In comparison to what we're making is interesting. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you think that there's anything like this on television right now, Kenny? Can you think of, or Meredith, can you think of anything like this?
I was trying to think of even just characters that were like Jerry, because, you know, TV went through obviously the anti-hero phase, and then we had a lot of sort of complicated comedic female character, semi-comedic female characters, but I don't know that you have any female characters, you know, protagonists that are as strange as Jerry. I'm trying to think. I mean, I guess if you take a little bit of, what's her face, Amy Jellicoe from Enlightened, and you have to take a lot of different
Amy
characters.
Jellicoe.
Yeah, I know, not Jelly Knack. Like, maybe they're related though. I don't know. You'd have to go a long way to get to Jerry. Can you think of anyone who's sort of the criminal element, the like it's super not, horniness? I don't know.
It's definitely not the same, but
it's not the same.
Right. It is the character I'm thinking of who's not currently on TV, but she was very recently, is Kimmy Schmidt.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
That same, yeah. Like, comes from another planet, you know, type person.
Yeah,
yeah. Girls Five obvious. Eva has a bit of this vibe, a little. I mean, yes. I think that there's. I think Tina Fey's. Yeah, her whole oeuvre feels like it has a little bit of that.
As Tina Fey, you know, was like throughout the run of 30 Rock, was able to kind of with every episode sneak a little more than before. She did kind of get here, but has always kind of done stuff for, you know, major studios. The other thing that I would say is within this realm, which isn't, you know, a narrative, is I think you should leave. Mm-hmm. What he does on that is just like, you know, it opens my head and just, you know, like pulls at my brain.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that the whole, forgive me, why can't I think of his name? The guy who produces John Wilson also kind of fits in terms of like, mm-hmm. does, like really outside the, didn't he have a Comedy Central show?
I think
Nathan Fielder.
Nathan Fielder, that's who I'm
talking about. Oh, yeah. That guy's the fucking greatest.
He definitely has.
That guy's playing
a little bit of the but I think that all of this, to wrap up, I feel like all of this speaks to the fact that I do feel like the comedy that we're speaking of, which is definitely out there, is still kind of kissing up against reality, to your point, Kenny, whereas this is not really doing
that. I was going to say, I don't really watch these shows, but Comedy Central still does stuff like this.
I think so.
Another Period is kind of...
Yes.
Right? And then there's the one with Daniel Radcliffe in the West.
Oh yeah,
kind of like this, where they're still always kind of, you know, messing with form and messing with how to spoof today and messing that kind of stuff. Like I do think that they are and will remain a home for wild ass creators who can bring in an episode of TV for under $500,000.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Drunk History was obviously enormous for them too. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it is, to your point, Kenny, if you can make something kooky and cheap, they'll probably let you take a swing at it.
Yeah.
And more power to them for it. But Meredith, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this show with us, and quite frankly, making Kenny and I watch it, because it is a fucking gift you have given us.
Yes.
Well, you're welcome.
Truly, you know, Kenny and I have a list of sort of, you know, all the shows that we want to kind of hopefully hit upon throughout the course of this series, and this was not on that list. So, and that's a weakness on our part for having not seen just how brilliant this show was. And I'm so thankful for you pointing us in that direction, truly. So,
well, I live to serve.
where can people find you on the socials and what have you?
You can find me on Elon Musk's Twitter at Meredith Blake. if you must, that's probably the easiest if you way.
Musk. Okay,
and at latimes.com.
There you go. More importantly, they can read your work at LA Times.
Yes.
And thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate the real newspaper
you work for.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Meredith. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.